Hello, everyone, and welcome to the most stupidest podcast in the world, House of Games. Today, I'm joined by my idiot host, Otto! But it takes two to make up a dumb and dumber duo, so I'm still here as well. So, let us bang our heads together and enter this week's episode of House of Games. Welcome everyone to this week's episode of House of Games, and this week as well it's gonna be me and Rune, and I have yet another special theme for this episode. So we're just gonna make it as a discussion on accessibility in video games is my plan. So with that said, I think I should first introduce what accessibility is in games. So the way I understand it is that basically you adapt the game so that, for example, for people who have disabilities, say for example that you are deaf and can't hear, then you would want to have subtitles, for example, for dialogue in the game. Or if somebody is colorblind, you would have some sort of filter that would make it easier for them to be able to distinguish different objects in the game, and so on. So my plan is simply this, that we're gonna go through like different ways of thinking about accessibility and maybe arguing for or against if it's worth doing, since it's a more narrow like audience than doing it something for everyone or doing it for only people who don't have disabilities or anything like that, or also if it has maybe benefits for people who doesn't have disabilities as well. So I think starting off, I could just go through. I have a couple of accessibility features that I can start with, and then we can just discuss each one. What do you think about that?
Sounds good.
Good. So the first one, I thought that... So the way I think I want to frame this is that, you know, accessibility is great, but it's also expensive. So if you adapt your game for every single disability in the world, it's going to be really expensive to make, and the target audience, it's going to be hard to reach, I think. So I think the point would be maybe to read out like stuff that you can adapt that will also benefit like regular players as well. So I'll just start off with that in mind. So the first thing I thought about regarding accessibility is, like, as I said, subtitles is something that I think can be beneficial for everyone and help people who maybe have a hard time hearing or stuff like that. For your game, Rune, do you plan to have subtitles, or is it only subtitles, or what's your like game plan?
Yeah, I mean, from my point of view, having voices is a luxury at this point. I mean, when you're in the dev, I sent you the presentation video for my game, and I'm using an AI generated voice for that, which is cool. But I was thinking, oh man, maybe I could use this for the entire game. But it's just like, just for that presentation video, it took me ages to make her sort of say it the right way, and there's still a couple of places where she what is it called, intonation, when like the way she emphasizes certain things is kind of weird, so that's not going to be a thing. So but regarding subtitles, I mean, it's all text based in my games, and it's always been, and when I play other games, I prefer to play with subtitles. I think from what I can tell, like native English speakers, like from Britain and America, they prefer when it's no subtitles. But, you know, grow up in Sweden, watching everything in English, and usually as a kid, you would read it in Swedish. The subtitle doesn't bother me at all. It does bother me now if I were to watch a English movie and there's Swedish subtitles, because the translation is kind of weird sometimes, now that my English is probably better than my Swedish. But, and I watch movies with my wife, we have subtitles, like English subtitles on English movies, and that helps a lot for both of us. And especially when I was thinking about Interstellar, the main character there, he's really mumbling a lot.
Right.
And I was watching this with my friend while we were backpacking in Central America. And he said, man, that movie was probably pretty good, but I have no fucking clue what he was saying. Because this was in Panama, the subtitles were in Spanish. So he couldn't read the Spanish stuff and he couldn't really understand what the main guy said most of the time. So I think subtitle is something that is awesome for everyone. I never even thought about it being for people with bad hearing. I just, you know, growing up in Sweden, you always have subtitles on. So I never really thought about it that way. But there will be subtitles in my game. I hope it will be voice actors, but that's, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
So that's my take on subtitles in particular.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I think I absolutely agree with that. And I think also you could see it as sort of a reverse on that, that if you want to do, I don't know how you would do it, but say that you somehow found a way that blind people could play your game, then the accessibility thing would be to have voice acting instead of like subtitles, I guess.
Mm. But then it goes back to what you said before. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
Like, so before I sort of went on a hiatus from gaming podcasts, I used to listen to loads, but now I don't listen to anything.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's because we make our own podcast. Same thing with games. I barely play them anymore, but because I make games. But anyway, when I was listening to a lot of podcasts, I feel like around the time I sort of stopped listening, it was around Last of Us 2, having a lot of great accessibility features. And I remember being somewhat upset with critics and so on, because then after that game came out, it was like they sort of set a new standard on what should be in a game in terms of accessibility. And I got so frustrated, like, well, don't these like journalists or critics understand that it's so fucking expensive? Like, of course Sony can do it. Of course they can hire an entire team to tackle this. But like, and I felt like a lot of games after The Last of Us 2 sort of fell into this sort of position where they got criticized for not having accessibility options, which was kind of weird because first of all, I think The Last of Us 2 was the one who really did a really good job at this. And it was kind of like, let's say it was the first game who really had this implemented from the get-go, which is another thing I sort of think you have to keep that in mind when you start developing the game, or at least maybe you can throw it in and then, I don't know. But my point is, I felt like a lot of games after this got sort of criticized for not having accessibility options. And I felt sort of like, man, poor studios who get shit for that. I mean, this is a new thing. Like, why? Yeah. And it's expensive. But of course, if you're a big studio, I think it's worth it. And I think it's great they do it. But yeah, I remember I felt a bit sorry for studios that came out with games after that and sort of got thrown under the bus for not having these amazing accessibility options. What was the main thing, your question?
It was just a note about like if you somehow could have like somebody who is blind or has impaired vision be able to play your game somehow, then I guess the other way around would be that having voice acting would be the accessibility option instead of the other way around.
But I think in that case, I'm playing, my son is almost 4, so I'm sort of introducing him to games now. When I grew up, we were only allowed to play in the winter, and I'm sort of keeping that tradition because I think that's a sane thing to do. When it's cold outside, we, you know, cuddle up in front of the TV and play games together. So you started there, last week, literally, we started playing games, and we played Mario Kart. And Nintendo's amazing at doing this, I wouldn't call it accessibility options, but more child-friendly options. So when you play Mario Kart, you can just, it just drives itself. So my son doesn't do shit, but then he hold the controller and I realized that he's sort of staring with the whole controller. I'm like, well, hold on, there's actually an option so you can stare with a controller. So then he's staring with a controller and the handicap mode or whatever it's called, it keeps you on the track and it hits the acceleration button for you. And then after playing a couple of nights, I turned off the gyroscope thingy. So now he's using the joysticks. But he's, I still have that other option turned on, so he can't fall off the track. And this is really cool. It's super fun that they do this in Nintendo in this case. And I was thinking while I was playing this, like, this is probably a good way to introduce kids to games nowadays. Because when we played games growing up, it was all 2D. So it was not as complicated as it is today, I would imagine. So these options makes it easier for kids to tag along. But now what you talked about, like, for example, a blind person, I do even believe that some of the Nintendo games, some of the Mario levels, you can use sort of, if you can't finish it, you just let the game play itself and it does it for you. So you could have something like that, let's say The Last of Us, and it play the whole gameplay itself, and then it's just a narrator telling you what's going on. But at that point, when I'm thinking about it, I mean, there's different levels of blindness, but I imagine, like, when it's totally black for you, you don't see anything. So in that case, I would just say, you know, it's better to probably listen to a book in that case. And then also on top of that, like, this is very fascinating. I just realized, if you've been blind your entire life, like, would it matter what they describe? Like, how would you know what it looked like anyway?
Yeah, that's very interesting. There is this guy who is called something like the blind film critic. So he is blind and has been since birth, but he still reviews movies, like regular movies, like Fight Club or whatever. And the way he watches them, as I understand it, is that for some movies you have audio description. So in addition to just hearing the movie, then you also have like a voice describing what's happening and what the scene looks like and stuff. So yeah, maybe we should ask somebody like him if we can get him on the show. Like, could he play games and what could he play?
Now, I'm really curious, like, how he can imagine the game look like if you've never seen anything. That's interesting.
But I guess then, also, there's also the sort of factor of doing closed captions for sound effects and stuff. So, but I guess that wouldn't be that much extra work, since, you know, you are gonna somehow sort of write all of the sounds that are gonna be in the game anyhow. So, So for captions, I guess for me it's a 10 out of 10 Houses of Games for feature. So, you know, it's convenient to do. It's not that much extra work. It's a benefit for everyone. So, 10 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I agree. That's...
Yeah, and the next one, I think that's also going to be sort of highly rated by me. So the next feature is custom controls. So being able to set, like, a custom control for all of the actions that you can do in-game. So instead of having like this button jumps and this button attacks and whatever it is, that you get a configuration that where you can set any key on the joypad or gamepad or the keyboard that you're using to do whatever you want to do. And yeah, so I think that's also, you know, something beneficial for everyone. But I don't know how complicated it is. I think it might be a little bit more, but not that much. I don't know. Have you done anything like it?
No. I mean, I can barely make it work just figuring out how to control things. One of the biggest issues I have now with Sunset Moon is to make it work with mouse and with a controller. I just don't know. I have no fucking clue how I've been trying to fix this forever. And I'm on maybe my fifth attempt now, so taking a break from it. And now for some reason, I can open, for example, my inventory menu and I can highlight a button. And if I click on it's called the R3 on the PlayStation 4 controller, at least, the joystick, you click it inwards. It will actually pick up the thing I want to pick up from the inventory. And then I can move it with my mouse and release it again with R3. And I can also do this action with my mouse by clicking the left button or whatever on the mouse. But it just won't work if I want to do it with the X button or the A button on the Xbox controller. I have no clue why it's doing this. So I can barely make it work without any configurations. I don't value this as much as you. Because I think the way it's designed is probably best anyway. So I don't really care for it. I do think that I know some people do want to change the controllers. But I don't know. Like when I play games, I just do whatever is intended to. And but some people, the first thing they do is going to the settings menu and messing around. I'm like, oh, nope, I just play it. And then if something really bothers me, I will maybe try to change it. For example, the vertical,
the
when you look
thingy.
Up and down.
Yeah.
And even that, sometimes I forget what I am used to. So I start playing a game and then after like 15, 30 minutes, I'm like, this feels weird. And then I had to go into the settings and change it.
But this is something I wish that it would be solved at the game engine level instead. Because this is something that's relevant for every single game, like in existence. That you have like certain functions need to be triggered by certain like commands or buttons or whatever it is. And so it would be great if you would have like that sort of menu at the game engine level that you would just say like drag and drop functions or something. This function, which key, and this function, which key, and so on. And then you would just like sort of copy that code to a dialogue system of your own in the game that would just do the same thing, that here is the function that's gonna jump and then like do the whole thing. Or if there are some like packages for it that already or something, but
I think the new input system in Unity is way easier than the old one. Like now you can I can assign the action button to the south D-pad button or and then it will just work on whatever controller. It will just take the one, the X button for the PlayStation, for example, and B on Switch and all that, because it's just the south button. So that works much better. But it should be on a engine level, this kind of thing. But I was also thinking these new accessibility controllers, you can basically remap everything there. So at that point, I'm not sure how that works, but I suppose it's like a hardware thing where you press a button that you want to be the X button, for example, and then you can sort of map. It seems like you can map it anywhere you want.
Okay, so is this like a controller you can buy or like a software feature or?
I can send you the PlayStation have a...
Yeah, I guess that's possible too, so that you would have like... If the game doesn't do it, then the gamepad itself could just be like, if you press the X, you want that to be the R2 or whatever.
Yeah, and they also have these sort of Edge Elite controllers, which I know you can remap certain buttons on the back. I sent you the longest link in the history. But so that one, I think, is quite customizable. But this one is, I think,
oh,
for really...
interesting.
Maybe someone with one arm or just a couple of fingers and using an elbow to play.
Yeah, it's a really interesting like design of it. It's like... I'll make sure to link this in the description, but it's sort of like a wheel with like a joystick at the side. So I wonder if this would be actually faster or not. I mean, maybe, as you said, if you have like one arm, then maybe this is the only way you can play. But interesting. But I've heard that Godot actually has some sort of easier like input system than Unity has. For my game right now, I've only gotten to the point of like clicking a button with your mouse, so I haven't gotten to like real controls. But I've heard at least that they have some sort of input system that is maybe closer to the idea that I have, that like you have a dialogue or you have a menu or something, like this function equals this button or whatever it is, which is, yeah.
But how would that work if, because... One problem I have now with Sunset Moon, for example, is that if I want it to be this button while I do the dialogue, it might trigger the jump as well.
Yeah.
Like, how would that work in that case? Would you have to make like an if statement? If jumping equals false and dialogue tree is equal true, you press X and he will just skip to the next dialogue.
Well, I guess you would do it in sort of modes. So say that you start talking to somebody, then you are in conversation mode, and then you would have like this controller set is valid for the controller mode, and then like walking mode or fighting mode or whatever it is would, you know, apply in different situations. So I guess that's how I would do it, probably. And that, I guess you could just do like a single variable, like conversation mode equals true or something, or, you know, how you want to solve it.
Yeah, well, I give this 4 House of Games out of 10.
I'll go for 6, since I don't know how complicated it's going to be when I do it. But I imagine that, I guess the UI is what's going to be more complicated in my mind. That like doing a good UI where you can like remap all of the controls and stuff is going to be more complicated than like assigning it to whatever. So 6 Houses of Games for me. So another thing that I thought about that's really handy for people who are not that used to games, that I've heard people spoke about earlier, but the thing that when you need to press a controller to do a certain action, like Nintendo games do this really well, that you write on the screen what action to push. Like, say that you come up to an item and you can't pick it up, then as you walk close to it, like some sort of text appears somewhere where it says like X pick up or something. So you don't have to remember, but you can always, you get the information like right away. And not only doing that, but also like displaying not only what button it is, but where on like the controller, for example, it is. So you highlight like this is where the X is on the controller, press that to pick up. And then I've seen that like for example, my parents or stuff, people who are really not used to playing games, that really makes it so much easier to, I wouldn't say that this is a like disability availability feature, rather than just that it's just people who suck at games accessibility thing. But that's also something that I guess that would be like really useful as well. So I'll include that into the controls sort of section.
Well, speaking of those things, when things pop up on the screen, we also tried this Pikmin 4 demo. And one thing that stood out to me is that it's so, like, the UI pop-ups, like you mentioned, like, Nintendo's really good at showing you what to do and where to press it. I got quite annoyed with how big it was, because we play on the TV, and I felt like, this is so, like, handheld mode, based on the handheld when you play this Nintendo Switch. So I thought that was a bit weird, and I don't know, that wouldn't be an accessibility thing, but it would be nice if the UI sort of, all these UI elements sort of adapted to the size of your screen, because now when we're playing the TV, I feel like they're so big and clunky, they sort of take up a lot of the space. So not sure where I was going with that, but they are good at showing that in Nintendo games.
Oh, one more thing that I thought about related to controls, something that I haven't tried myself, but I've heard is could be really good for this. So when Steam released their Steam controller, they also made it possible to like make your own like input map, and then you could share that with other people. So if somebody would make something that's accessible for this or that disability, then you could just download that and then have it applied to your controller. So having something like that, I guess, would also be like good for accessibility without you as the producer having to do anything about it. So the next thing I think that I have like zero knowledge about, but I thought I'd just brought it up because it's one of the things that I think is mentioned often when it comes to disabilities and stuff or accessibility. And that is like colorblind modes and stuff like that. And that I don't know at all how like complicated it is to do, because it's one thing, I think, to do a filter that would make all the blues green, or, you know, whatever colors, I have no clue. But it's also that you, I guess you have to like design your game and color your game so that it would work with the filter, and then like the stuff that needs to be highlighted and important has to be colored in a way that's also like taking into consideration a colorblind mode as well, which feels really complicated. I don't know, maybe it's like a...
No, I actually went to one of these indie meetups here in Tokyo, and it was around the time I stopped listening to podcasts and all that stuff, but there was a developer, like three people from California, I think, and they showed off a game they made with colorblindness in mind. And the whole game looked quite interesting in terms of colors and stuff like that to make it. And they talked about, for example, they had these, the things you can die from were just very sharp red colors. And then there was like big contrast between that and where you can walk and run and jump and do all the other things. So it was quite interesting to see it. But then I was thinking, I saw this presentation and I thought it looked really cool, a bit weird at the same time, but it was clearly designed specifically for people with color blindness or, you know, some level of blindness. And I did think about, like, I wouldn't want to do that in my own game to sacrifice all of that for that sounds so rude, but like for maybe a very small audience. I would probably try to make it the way I want it to look first. And then again, if I had, you know, time and money, I would implement it after the fact. Because I think, like, from what I saw in that particular game, it felt like the whole game became, like, the identity of the game was just that it was for colorblind people. I think if you are not colorblind, you would, like I said, it looked cool or interesting just because I never seen anything like it. But, you know, it would be weird if everything was made for example, colorblindness in mind. Because then, yeah, it feels like you would be chasing not your own artistic vision rather than chasing something else to make it accessible for everyone. And I'm always sort of against that. I think you should try to do what you want to do first. And then when you have achieved that, you could hopefully implement these things after the fact. Or, yeah, like you said, maybe some sort of filter would solve that. But I have no idea how that would even work.
I'll put this as a hook to or an anchor to a future episode. Maybe someday we can talk to somebody who has worked with this or has some experience of it. But it also sort of reminds me of a very good talk about like color in games, which is, I'm not sure if it was aimed at accessibility or just making games more clear, but I will make sure to link it in the description. So the talk talked about how you should distinguish stuff in games. So I think this is something, I'm not sure how I would do it for colorblind people, but I think something that could be applicable to both like regular gamers and like people with disabilities or people who are not used with games is that like to work with a lot with the contrast. So like the way you would make something distinguishable is like through as many senses as possible. So say that you have an enemy. So then you would perhaps like do it in like a bright color or something that really sticks out from the environment. And then you would make like the size of the enemy stick out from the environment. So it's clear like that this is something to pay attention to. And you would make it like animated to make it, you know, your eye catches attention to the movement. And then you would make like the sound of the enemy really distinct, and then you would make like vibrations particular to that enemy or something, and you would do that like throughout your whole game basically to make everything really clear that, you know, sure, if you played it a lot you'll understand it, but even to the most experienced ones, if you make it really intuitive so that like in the blink of an eye you immediately understand what is important in what you're looking at and where to go and where the enemy is and stuff. I think there's a lot of games that I like but would that would benefit from this a lot.
Yeah, I have a problem when I make my games to make it clear what is where you can jump, for example, in Knife Boy. Before I remade it, it was really impossible to almost tell. I mean, for me, it wasn't because I obviously knew. And I feel like I have the same thing with Sunset Moon, but, you know, it's still a work in progress. But one of the things I will focus on a lot later on is to make it, even though it's 2D, still try to achieve some sort of depth to the characters, which you can do by using different shades of gray or whatever to make them look a bit more round. And I will have like a black outline on them so they are distinguished from the background, especially when it's top down. So I think that's quite tricky to just do it, you know, as a person who has no visual problems. And this is another thing about this accessibility in games, why it's so, like, of course, I think everyone wants it in their games, but it's just, man, how do you do something you don't know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I would have no idea how to even start doing it. Like, how can I even imagine something that I can't even see or hear or experience?
Yeah, that's true.
And this is where it comes in. Like, you would need feedback. You need to go online and ask people, talk to people. And when you're like a little indie dev, you know, that's a lot of time spent on something that might not even matter.
Yeah, exactly. And something that I did see when I did a little bit of research for this is gameaccessibilityguidelines.com, which apparently has a lot of like stuff that for accessibility, like everything from like a basic stuff to like more complex stuff that is more niched for specific audiences. So I guess you would probably pick one of those levels depending on how big your game is. Like the bigger the reach, the higher is the likelihood that somebody really needs accessibility in your games. So I'll link that as well for if anyone is interested in looking through it. But an example that for like the visual stuff that I think is really good as well is Mirror's Edge. Have you played that?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so they do what they call runner's vision, I think they call it in the lore of the game. But basically, it's a parkour game, so where you're supposed to run and where you're supposed to jump or climb and stuff, it's usually colored with red, I think. So then you, like the whole background is white, almost completely white. So there's like, it's like an urban setting where there's like skyscrapers and stuff. And then like the stuff, like the ladder you're supposed to climb or whatever it is, it's usually colored red. So they do it really well that to, without text or words, they communicate what you are supposed to do. I guess something like that is what you would want to do. I mean, I think in my game as well, I have a little bit of this problem already that there's not that much distinct for you to look at. Like, it's supposed to be a world map, and then around that is a train going around the equator. But I think already with the world map and the train, there's nothing that's too distinct as well with the background, which is stars. There's like a lot of visual information, but maybe I should scale it down to make it more clear, like this is the thing that you're supposed to look at, and so on.
You can make, I was thinking like a train track, you know, it's made of steel, it could sort of shimmer a little bit, like whiteness.
Yeah.
White, sparkly. Uncharted is another example of how the way they do it, it was kind of like yellowish, or they also made distinct colors everywhere. And there was this ongoing joke, like you're in the middle of the jungle and you're climbing this cliff, but for some reason it's so clear where you can climb and not, as if people have been doing that forever. But they also do like quite bright colors and so on to make it clear where you go.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed do something similar where they have like white on the edges of where you're supposed to be climbing, whatever surface it is.
The only, I don't know how you would solve it otherwise, but like what I find silly, especially with Uncharted, for example, is that you can't fail. It's just like you stare in that direction and he almost do it himself. So I always sort of wonder like, well, what's the point of this? But I don't know. It feels cool, maybe. I suppose it feels pretty cool when you climb those things and make these insane jumps and so on. Yeah, I suppose sometimes you die, but It's very simple.
I'll just bunch the visual stuff into one single point, and I'll give that maybe a 5 out of 10. Because there's like some stuff I think is probably easy, or in quotations, easy to make. Like trying to make stuff like visually distinct. But there's other stuff that I have no idea about. And as you say, I think you would probably need to research a lot to like understand, like, does this work with colorblind people? And there's also different kinds of colorblindness, as I understand it. So then even to test that, if it even works or not, you would have to get like a very specific group of people to test that. So 5 out of 10 Houses of Games.
I think I scored this one higher, even though I was quite critical about it. But I don't know. It's like, I think it's, I sort of forgot how we scored these things. I suppose, I think it's important, but it's just like, takes a lot of resources and expensive and difficult for me personally. But I, again, like the first one we talked about, if you're a big studio and you can research it, I think you should, as long as it doesn't hurt your artistic vision you had for the game.
Yeah.
So that's the caveat to it, I suppose. Like, do that first, then implement it later. But I guess I give this importance 6.5 out of 10 House of Games.
Nice. And now I think we come to the final one, which is where maybe we're going to be divided. So one of the things that I researched that listed accessibility is difficulty. So, like, but this really does come to the core of what is the artistic vision for the game. Since game, apart from every other medium, is like based on difficulty that you're able to do stuff. It's not just watching a movie or having it on in the background. You have to be able to accomplish stuff. So Dark Souls is an example that people talk about a lot, that they wish that it had an easy mode for to be accessible to other people. But then the question becomes, should it actually have to be accessible to everyone? Maybe it just should be what it is, and then people will just have to play something else if you want to play that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in camp hard games. I don't think it should be. I don't think games should be accessible for everyone, period. Like, I think that's quite a quite ridiculous statement. They're like kids starving to death, and then we're sitting here bitching about games be this $100 games being too difficult. Like, oh, poor fucking me. That's sort of like, I can't get that thought out of my mind, but.
Yes, I would just start to say that I agree with that, absolutely. Go ahead.
Like Star Wars Force Unleashed, what's it called? Like, there are two Star Wars games, and they were supposed to be like the Dark Souls games, and I started playing it, and I didn't feel like it was anything like it, but I also just changed the difficulty to easy, because I got more sucked into the story than the actual game. So I bumped it down to easy and just flew through the game. So I got zero satisfaction from a Soulsborne perspective, where you feel like you accomplish something, and when you accomplish these difficult tasks, you get so excited. So I didn't get any of that from the Star Wars games, but that's what I tend to do when I don't really care too much. I'm not sure. If I care too much about the story, I just want to see the story. So I always make it easier if there's an option to do that on the fly. Tend to play games normal difficulty. Except the Souls games, they're always hard, and that's what I love about them, and that you can't change it, because I know myself, I would just change it to make it easy for myself if I were stuck for too long. So I do like that I can't change it, because then I keep fighting and then leveling up and all that stuff, and eventually I kill the boss and I just feel like $1 million baby, and then I'm, having a really good time. So I don't think there should be those options in every game, of course. Yeah, that's it. Quite black and white on that one.
Yeah. Well, I agree, or I think like this call for people's games to be easier, I think I have two perspectives on that. So the first one is, I agree with you that, well, first of all, sure, this is not gonna solve like world peace. You know, it's a really trivial and non-important matter. I totally agree with that. But second on that I think that people shouldn't demand that other people's games should be easier. I mean, because, you know, I think you should make your own game or play the games that suit your needs. If that's the case, you shouldn't be able to demand that art cater to you in the same way that you shouldn't be able to complain to like painters that they should paint the stuff that you understand or can relate to. So if they paint something that's not interesting to you, then you should just move on and like watch the stuff that you can enjoy, for example.
This whole debacle about the Souls games and all that stuff, I felt like when that was going down, it was like everywhere. I almost felt like it was game critics who sucked at these games and probably, really wanted to play them, got angry because there were no easy mode, and sort of threw the disability community under the bus and said, well, they can't play these games. Like, kind of feel like you suck and you just use that as an excuse. That's a lot sort of my feeling about the whole thing.
You know, it's sort of ironic, but I would like to do an episode on the game journalist one day, because that seems to be a problem, that you have this sort of class of people who are supposed to guide the rest of like the consumers on what games are good or not, but they themselves can't even play every game because they suck at playing games, even though their job is to play games and like evaluate it, which is so weird. Like, how do you even get that? I mean, it should be part of the job being able to like complete, you know, the Souls games or something like that.
That would be a hell of a work interview. Finish off Bloodborne.
Yeah, I mean, at least it's like if you are a food critic, but you are like and your job is to evaluate every kind of food, but you are a vegan. Fine, you are a vegan. You can evaluate vegan food, but you can't evaluate like chicken and say it's the worst just because you can't eat it. And it's the same thing, I think, with like playing games. If you can't evaluate it from like a real, it's the same thing if you would like play like SimCity or something and you like don't understand how to build a city or you don't understand how like the tax mechanics relate to whatever else. If you don't understand that, then you shouldn't be able to evaluate it. It's the same thing with difficulty, I think, which is, you know, it should be pretty basic, but apparently for some reason it's like they can't do their job, literally. And then, you know, the artist gets the blame instead of like... yeah. Well, at least, so that's my opinion on that. That you shouldn't, like, demand that others just adapt their art to you. But then my other perspective is, like, from a perspective of making games, then perhaps I think I would make like an easy mode if I would do something like that, perhaps. I'm not sure, because difficulty seems so hard to balance, and it's, as you said, that I as well don't like when stuff is too easy, because I know I will take the easy route and then I won't enjoy it as if I have to fight for it. So one example is like the Witcher games. I played a lot of that, maybe half of the game like on easy difficulty, and then I had a hiatus of it, and then I wanted to pick it up again, and I thought, why don't I just play it like in the most difficult, and then, you know, it's gonna be hard at first, but eventually I'll just get that good that I can play and enjoy it on the hardest difficulty, which I could. And so I've almost, like, I think 90% or something completed it on the hardest difficulty, which is fun. But then I have another example, which is Knack, which is K-N-A-C-K, like a sort of a almost unknown game. I haven't heard anyone talk about it, but it's a really fun platforming game. And that also has this sort of, what is it called? Dark Souls mentality, that it's really difficult. And that's sort of the charm if you put the difficulty at the highest. But that, for some reason, I mean, at least with The Witcher, the combat mechanic is so is made so that you can, even if it's difficulty, if it, even if it's difficult, you sort of can get around it and you can dodge forever and you can do like prepare with more potions and stuff, and you know, eventually somehow you get through this boss fight or whatever it is. But with Knack, which is a more platforming game, it's more often that it's a one-hit kill for a lot of enemies, which makes it so frustrating. I mean, sure, it's hard, and I appreciate it sometimes, but I appreciate it if I, like, mentally feel that I can overcome this. But if it's just like a brick wall that, you know, either you will do it or not, or, you know, you'll fail for, like, a week on this one enemy until you, like, succeed once. You know, if I don't enjoy it enough, I get so frustrated and just stop playing it, which is what I've done with that game. I wish I want to, you know, I want to keep playing it, but I don't want to, like, admit to myself that I can't do it, so I won't lower the difficulty. So, you know, for myself, if I would do, like, a difficulty scale on my game, I think... I'm not sure how I would do it. I think maybe I wouldn't have it only super hard, but at the same time, you don't want to dumb it down either, because people won't enjoy it if you do.
Yeah, also, especially based on what kind of game it is. One thing I noticed when I made, for example, Knife Boy, is because I made the game, it's super easy for me. But when I let others play it, it seemed quite hard. So that could be, because like you said, it's really hard to balance, like... Especially when you make the game yourself, and if you don't have like a testing team and all that stuff, going back to, you know, being an indie developer when you have to do everything yourself. I was just thinking now when you talked that maybe that would be to make a fairly hard game is when the developer himself or herself can play through it fairly easily. That equals a quite difficult game for the person who then buys it. But yeah, how to balance it is really hard, and then on top of that, you're gonna do different difficulties. That's like, I mean, if you really want to do it properly, it's almost like making an entire new game, because you would have to rebalance everything, or the sort of lazy way of doing it would be like a one hit kill. That's the hard mode, and easy mode is that you can take more hits, and you when you punch or beat the enemies up, it takes more damage on them. Those are quite simple to do, I suppose, but they're also quite lazy. And I don't think the game itself would benefit from it in terms of funness and all that stuff. And which means that if you really want to make it right, it will take a lot of time and resources and a lot of work.
Well, I guess some things that I've seen that has tried to balance this, like having an easy mode or not, is like... You have things like, for example, when you go below some certain difficulty level, then you won't get achievements, or you will only get the achievements for the difficulty that you've gotten, or you get like special skins or something, like special rewards for doing, unlock certain stuff for completing in the game in a certain difficulty. So then you can still play it in easy, but you won't get all of the benefits. So you sort of get a little bit of best of both worlds, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a good solution. I'm a former trophy whore, so I'm not sure if I like when they're locked to difficulties, but back in the day, I would always beat the games in hard anyway to get the trophies. But so in the Uncharted games, I would play them in normal first, because that's how it's, in quotes, intended to be played. So I got the easy and normal trophy. And then I would play it in hard, because you had it to play it in hard to unlock super hard. So I would play through the game three times just to get the trophy. And by the time I was done with all the trophy hunting for these games, I was so sick of them. So in hindsight, I wish it wasn't locked to... A trophy was sort of locked to each difficulty. Instead, doing what you said, like you get rewarded for playing it in super hard with a skin or something has some sort of bragging right, but not linked to the trophies. But it's just me, like I sort of play those games so much that I was sort of sick and tired of them once I had platinumed all of them.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I sort of at heart am a completionist, but I know intellectually that when I try to do these things, like try to get every trophy for something, that I just get too sick of it, or like I just end up quitting playing the game. But in that instance, some games have done something like where, I mean, I think you should have the like most difficult part of the game unlocked to from the beginning, so that you don't have to play it on hard first and then being able to play like the hardest mode. You should have like the hardest mode instantaneously. And then I think it should just scale down. So if you like complete it on like the most difficult part, then you should get all of the lower difficulty. So every normal, easy, whatever. So that you don't have to like replay the same thing just because it's a little bit more difficult.
Well, in Uncharted, you get the, yeah, like I said, you play it on hard, you get all the previous ones. So at least that's good. But yeah, I play those games 3 times each just because I wanted to play them on normal first for the story and just the overall experience. And then the rest was just grinding.
Right, yeah. Well, for difficulty, I think I will rate it at maybe 4 out of 10 Houses of Games, because I get that it does make it more accessible, but that is at the same time the issue with it, that it does make it more accessible, and it's like with everything else, like you get what you pay for. If you pay nothing for it, then it's worthless, but you pay a lot of it, you pay a lot for something, then it's worth a lot. Which is like the Souls games. I mean, nobody is complaining that like Mario Kart should be easier because it's not worth very much to complete a lap. So, yeah, I think leave games alone and make your own easy games if you want to.
Yeah, sounds about right. 4 out of 10 House of Games. I do agree with you. It's what makes it good is also what makes it bad. And then it's just sort of like a, in terms of feeling about it, it's just like a coin flip, basically.
Yeah.
It's kinda, but I suppose I lean more towards do the game you want to make, and then people either like can play it or they can't for whatever reason. It doesn't have to be an accessibility thing. It could be that some gamers just suck at it too. And
yeah.
You shouldn't have to adapt to that. You should do what you want to do. And then people who like it, they will appreciate it more instead of sort of pleasing everyone. I feel like that will sort of, what is that called? Well, it will just spread out thin in that.
Yeah, it will water it out like to the masses. And also, I really would like to know, like, seriously, what the thing about, like, game journalists being bad at games is. Like, how do you become a game journalist? I mean, like, the thing about it is, sure, you have to be good at writing, but you also have to be able to... I mean, it's like being a sommelier and not drinking alcohol. It's, you know, you can't give a good opinion on it.
Let's try to get a journalist on the show and...
Yeah, that would be great.
Up against the wall and ask him.
Yeah. Well, I guess since we're just about over an hour, so I think we'll end it here then, I guess. All right. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Rune, for being my co-host, as always. Let us know what you think about these things. How do you rate them? How many Houses of Games? And any other accessibility features that you like or anything like that. Leave a voicemail if you want to. And what else? Someday I'm going to get that voicemail and I'm going to be really happy. So anyhow, yeah, share it, like it, you know, the stuff. And thank you so much for listening. Soon we're approaching 1 year. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a new era after 1 year. So remember that, people who are listening. So right now I think this is episode 49, so at 52 it's gonna be special, I think. So keep listening, please. Alright, so yeah, that does it for this episode. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye!
はい、バイ。